Hi, this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I'll look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. Today I'm interviewing Rob Double, Chief Operating Officer of leading digital broadcasting company based in London, Core London. Rob was a very active child, in his words, quite naughty, and he liked to make things happen rather than wait for them to happen. And as we will see, this has proven to be a major asset for him in his career. Now, Rob didn't know what he wanted to do, and so his early activities range from a number of things, such as writing music and posting an album to YouTube, and that was well before YouTubers were mainstream. And he also spent a gap year as a teacher. It was only at the end of uni that he decided he wanted to get into digital broadcasting. And as we'll hear, those traits from his childhood of making things happen are what have propelled him to achieve the status he has today in this field. So Rob, thank you so much for joining us. And today we're going to talk about your role of Chief Operating Officer of a leading London digital broadcasting company called Core London.
Yeah, that's the one.
But first I want to talk about your history and how you actually got here. It's quite interesting. So tell us from when you were at school, right the way through to your first job. That would be interesting.
Okay, so school... I started off at a local school near where I lived in Chislehurst. I moved to a school called Dulwich College in South London for the rest of my education, right up until A-level, because I wasn't that well behaved at my previous school and I needed to be kicked up the backside a little bit.
Tell us a bit more about the academic side. You did A-levels.
Yeah, so I did theatre studies, geography and politics, and then history AS. I applied to do geography at university, thinking that I wanted to do geography.
Yeah.
Well, really, I knew I liked human geography and I wanted to do politics, but for some reason I applied for geography. And I applied for, as you would, well, why not? I applied for Oxford to do geography. And then, because I applied for Oxford to do geography, so I had to apply for everywhere else to do geography. Because Oxford didn't offer straight politics.
Right.
I didn't get into Oxford. And I got offered from other places, but then I realised, you know what? I don't want to do geography, and there's no point me going to university to do something which I know was a second choice to start with.
Yes. Did you consider not going to university at all?
No, I think for me, I always wanted to go to university. I don't think it was anything to do with the academic side of it. I wanted a degree, and I acknowledge that it had been ingrained with me that you needed to go to university to access the sort of kind of professional jobs that I was perhaps wanting to go into at some point in the future.
Yeah. Because things have changed quite significantly. I mean, when you were of that mindset, that was very, very true. What year would that have been?
So 2011, probably.
Yeah, because the whole concept of apprenticeships wasn't even introduced until 2011, not in terms of access to professions like it is now. But you then sort of changed tack a little bit, didn't you? You decided to take a gap year.
Yeah, so after I kind of realised I didn't want to do the degree, and it just so happened that Dulwich, my school, had started off a scheme, and like an outreach project, effectively, with a school in At that point, it might have been in special measures. If not, it was very near to special measures, yeah. Ofsted special measures.
Right.
And they said, would anyone like to go to be a mentor? Now, this again was really rogue, you know.
Yeah.
Isla Sheppey, where is that?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have heard
where is it, by the way?
It's in Kent. It's just in the Kent estuary, right on the coast.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what, that actually sounds really interesting. I'd done a lot of, I suppose, early kind of mentor teaching through a lot of stuff I'd done with the cadets. When I did that, I'd done a few like leadership things at the school as well. So I thought, well, like
a little bit of grounding, yeah,
a little bit of grounding, but not really for what I was going to go into. Which
so you went there to be a mentor, but that quickly became full on teacher.
Yeah, well, it was very much an eye opening experience that they didn't have enough staff, they didn't have enough teachers, particularly in the core subjects, which is English, science, and maths.
Yeah,
and so I went into English, and it became clear is well. It's wrong for a class of 30 students to have a permanent cover teacher. Now, everyone knows when it's cover teacher time, everything starts getting a bit lax, including rules and sort of progress, because the cover teacher's not going to be there next day to mark your work.
Yes.
And they're probably not going to know your name. And they've got a different lanyard on, so you know who they are.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
And
yeah.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to take on these classes, and so that happened, really. And so it became that I was taking on sort of years 7 to 11.
And you were teaching English?
Teaching English, which I hadn't done at A-level, but...
Amazing.
Yeah, it just happened.
You did that for a whole year near enough?
Pretty much a whole year, yeah. Because then I went off to do Wimbledon.
Right.
Which I would highly recommend, doing court attendant.
As a court attendant.
Which is where it got me in the university mode as well, because a lot of university students do it because it's in the summer months as a way of getting a lot of money. Because you're on an hourly wage and you work a lot of hours every day, you know, five in the morning till 7, 8 at night.
Yeah.
And so you can rack up a lot of money for a student. That's the dream.
So you finished your gap year and then you went to university. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I did politics at Durham.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that. I kept on writing music throughout that. I really enjoyed just the lifestyle and the group of friends and being in halls and renting and stuff like that. That was really, really great. I still had no idea what I wanted to do, though, as a job.
Yeah.
So this was that I did this sort of stereotypical thing, I think, which is realizing, oh, loads of my friends are applying for all of these jobs and internships at these big, you know, flashy named companies and like BP or Goldman Sachs or big law firms and stuff like that. And I think in probably the feeling like insecure at the fact I wasn't progressing in terms of what I wanted to do, I kind of did that thing where I spent a very long time applying for loads of different jobs in loads of different sectors.
Yeah.
And you know, that it was also informative in a way because I wasn't very successful in many of the applications. Yeah. But I reflect on that now as a lot of the applications, I found myself having to ask other people what I should write and how I can write this better and that better and what should I say here. And I think if I reflect on that, if you're having to do that,
it's not your true
probably
passion.
Not doing or trying to applying for something that you really want to do.
I think that's absolutely true, that you know, when things don't work out, it tends to be because they're sort of not meant to, because it's maybe for whatever reason it's not the right thing for you, or even it's not the right thing for you yet. I definitely am a firm believer, and that's what you found to be the case, because in your last year of uni you sort of had a light bulb moment and you decided what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to do journalism, I think. I wanted to do broadcasting. And that was that. Yeah, that was probably third year was the time that I realised I want to commit and focus. And that was very reassuring in a way. When you've got that stability or focus and the concentration, it can be very effective if you're very proactive, because then you can really start. You're maximising your efforts into a small area and getting somewhere.
And you have a huge list of names where you actually got work experience. So you were indeed very proactive once you decided what you wanted to do. And I guess, you know, working for all these different companies, which you can list for us in a moment, sort of reinforced the fact that this new choice or this decision was the right one for you. List some of the companies that you went to work for.
So when I was in Durham, I worked for, I did student radio, which was a good way of doing broadcasting. Yeah. I did a local radio station in Darlington called Star FM.
Yeah.
I did Northeast Global Radio. I did BBC Radio London.
Yeah.
No, sorry, BBC Five Live. And then I did LBC.
Yeah.
I tried BBC Newcastle, wasn't successful there. And then I think that was quite a lot of them.
Quite a lot of them.
But it was just like week-long work experiences and phoning people up and saying, can I come and help?
But I think that's the thing that I wanted, because, you know, some of the, well, a lot of these names are very well known, and a lot of individuals would think, well, I'd never be able to get a job there. But you can, can't you, if you are prepared to be proactive and push yourself forward. Tell us what you did to get those jobs.
Well, it was, yeah, it's just a case, and actually this is true of Metro Radio, which is a big northern Newcastle radio. I'd emailed about 3 or 4 times. And then I called up to say, oh, the news desk, just to say, oh, I'm really interested in doing some work experience. And that was the prompt that got me the, oh, yeah, fine, okay, you know. And it's just a case a lot of the time. And then what I'd say is phone people up, don't just email, because emails are very easy to ignore and they're also very easy to forget. It's very difficult to actually forget. And I find this now, someone who you've spoken to, because you've made a human connection with them in a way. And even if, what I'd always used to normally do, and what I did when I, particularly when I was doing my master's, was that if you call someone up first and then say, they normally will say, send me an email.
Yes.
And then you send them an email, that email then means something to them. And they will have
and
a far
greater
dialogue. Connection. You can start that dialogue. But you've got to be persistent and be prepared to put yourself out there. And as I said, I wasn't successful with some.
So you decided, because of all of this activity, that broadcasting was for you, and then you decided that you were going to do a master's.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of, I was advised strongly that I needed to do a master's. And to be fair, if you do want to do master's and you don't want to go into journalism, it's a very good way of showing, it's like a passport. If you've done the master's, it shows you're committed and you're really interested and want to do journalism, want to do broadcasting in a serious way, not just I want to be a presenter and be the next sort of face of Top Gear or kind of thing.
What would you say to people who are who say, well, I'd love to do a master's, but I can't afford it, I'm worried about the student loan?
Well, yeah, so I genuinely, and I did, when I was in third year, I worked did as JCR president, so I did help a lot of undergraduates who had, you know, challenges like this or whatever, and advised them. Student loans, or at least heard, or I should say heard their concerns.
Yeah.
Student loans, I don't think, are really a massive barrier at all. I think they're massively demonised by whoever, and it's just the assumption is they're a bad thing, and they just say, oh, you leave university with X amount of debt. Think about the loan, though, for a second. It's incredibly preferable terms. You get the money for free, well, you know, to pay off your loans. You don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You only ever start paying it back once you earn enough where you can comfortably start paying it back, which I think 20-something thousand, 21, low 20s thousands. If you can't pay it back, or if you lose your job, you lose that money, you then stop paying your loan. And then, if it turns out you haven't been, you know, you get to a certain time period and it's just wiped clean.
Yeah.
So you don't have it for your whole life.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's lovely that the opportunity now to access professions via apprenticeships and courses of that nature, you know, is now mainstream and offered to everybody. But I really don't think that we should denigrate the university routes and talk about the issues of student loans, because exactly like you say, they are manageable, they are demonised. And I think that every individual ought to be given the opportunity to do either route, or indeed both routes. And isn't it amazing in this country that, you know, young people are supported in this manner? And I think rather than denigrating either one of these routes, we should be absolutely grateful for them and sort of talk about the opportunities.
Yeah.
You did the master's, you passed that, and while you were doing it, you, again, very proactive, you decided that there was a job that you could do.
Yeah,
it's about that.
I mean, it didn't exist. I would say everything in terms of where I am now came from a single email I sent to someone speculatively. And that's, I suppose, shows the importance of just contacting someone. There was no position available. There was no opening available. I just saw on YouTube, I think, a small production company doing a, you know, I think it was quite an embryonic kind of politics show. And I emailed the CEO. I found out the CEO's email. I emailed them and I said, can I just come in and just help you out? You know, just with a bit of work experience. I think I could help in a politics show.
Yeah.
I then got a meeting with the CEO, who's now the boss, my boss.
Yes.
And he said, oh, we're actually thinking of shutting down the politics. And I said, I think that's a really bad idea. I think now's the time you should really make politics a big part of your content. And it was just a conversation where he said, well, do you want to do it then?
And you were still doing your master's at this point.
I was still doing my master's, and I had then a split second to decide, am I going to say yes or am I going to say no, I don't think I'm ready for this? And I said yes. And I do not regret that decision one bit. And
well, I made an amazing example of, you know, you have to take opportunities when they're presented. But it didn't just happen for you. It wasn't luck. You went after it. You saw that there was something that you could add value to. And you went for it. So once you finished your master's, what happened then?
So I'd been working for this company, and it'd been successful enough, as the boss said, to, you know, true to his word, that I got offered a full-time job.
Fantastic.
Doing the politics full-time.
Yeah. Tell me about your typical day.
So a typical day is now waking up at 6:30-ish, if it's a normal day, And checking emails, getting ready, getting in for about 8:15. And then I normally get quite a lot of emails from clients in the morning, just checking things, confirming things, querying things, which I then have to deal with or send off to people or double check and run around and do stuff like that. Normally in the morning, we do a morning politics bulletin thing, which I present, and I work with Jenny, who's the politics producer on that. And then I work with the production team and chat. We have like a little sit down and chat through the day. What are the projects we've got running on? What's the progress? Are there any problems in terms of that, the progress of whether it's editing or producing? Is all the equipment okay? Is there any news otherwise?
Yeah.
And do all of that kind of stuff. And then a lot of it now is meetings with potential clients. Like, so someone comes in with an idea, or someone's got wants to pitch something, or we need to sort out some kind of problem. It's dealing with that. And then there's a little bit of working with Jenny, the producer, and the politics. You know, what do we want to do in the future? What's next week's plan? How's our content doing? Can we shift anything? This is in the news today. Can we reflect some of our recent content?
It really is as if you're working for a television network, but what they say, don't they, now is that the mobile phone is like the new TV, and then all these social media platforms are like the new stations. And what you're doing is producing content for one of the social media platforms, primarily YouTube.
Yeah.
And tell me, what's the biggest challenges in this role?
The biggest challenges is I think the amount of stuff that goes on, the amount of opportunities, the amount of conversations you have. It's, you can easily get, if you don't keep on top of sort of your admin, it can get very overwhelming and things start getting lost down cracks and holes.
Yeah.
And I think there's an inevitable problem that I'm largely responsible for running the production side, and things will inevitably, as it does, go wrong, or things haven't been done, or things are forgotten. And, you know, that can be quite frustrating, particularly if, because it's, there's so much happening, you haven't been aware of something or whatever. But quite rightly, as this person who's fundamentally responsible, you get the rap for it, or you have to spend the hours to resolve the issue. And I think there is an element of, as well, you know, when you're working in such a small team, the first element of that is, well, great, you get loads of experience and those different things, but you have to work incredibly hard.
Yes.
And be prepared to do everything else.
Where could this type of role lead to? Not necessarily even for you, but for anybody, really.
The nature of this area we're in, which is, this is the future. Digital content is the future.
Yes.
And you can talk to anyone in old media, they're deeply worried at the fact that conventional ways of entertaining people isn't making the same money it has been.
No.
This is the space where the future is in terms of the industry and where the money is. So if you're in this area, it can lead into it filters into any of the creative industries, to be honest, and that includes marketing, advertising, comms, PR. Obviously for me, if I wanted to go into the sort of journalism side and continue my political journalism, because I do really love that, and you know, making that work for me. or I could go into some other creative sector, or I could go into, I suppose now, a more management role.
And so for various people listening to this podcast now, and that would range from those who are sort of sitting in the classroom through to those maybe about to go to university or leaving university, or even those who are midway through their career and just want to change. If they're listening now and they're keen to get into this world of digital broadcasting, as you have, what would be your suggestions to them to make that happen?
Well, the most obvious thing is it costs you nothing to try out and create content online nowadays.
Yeah.
You can create an account on YouTube and make videos on YouTube or try out different kind of content on YouTube for free. And you have access to an incredible amount of resources and tutorials and everything online now in the digital space. And I can guarantee you, if you've been using, you know, online media for a while, you're going to be more knowledgeable than a lot of the people in established media organizations who are trying to work it out. So just get a feel for how it works. And you can do that from your own laptop or your school laptop or your university library for free.
Yes.
So get involved in that, particularly if you're at school.
And what about accessing companies so that, you know, you can maybe suggest solutions like you did with Core London, where you saw something and you just wrote straight in and said, you know, I think we could do something better here for you. Is that something you would suggest to people as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I can guarantee you there are, it doesn't matter how important or big or amazing you think the company is, pretty much every company, particularly in the media, are desperate for new ideas on how to make money in the digital space because it's so early.
Yeah.
You know, if someone came in, if it was 17 years old and said, I've got a really new, interesting way I think you guys could make money, we would probably take that meeting and hear them out.
Yes.
So if you've got an idea or you think you've discovered a new way of doing things, just go and approach people, because I can guarantee you they're dying to hear ideas. And perhaps, particularly if you, you know, hit the right person, say the right things and have the right idea, it will end up the break, which gives you
that
the job
step
6 months down the line.
That's fantastic. So, Rob, that's been fascinating. If people want to find out more about you, where would they go?
Probably to the production company website, which is www.corelondon.tv. If you want to see me in particular doing politics, it's just click on the politics tab on it, and or go on YouTube and type in Core Politics.
And if they want to find you on that tab, just tell us your surname. It's quite an unusual surname.
Yeah,
people are not going to forget it once they hear it.
Rob Double, and yes, that is double as in you double two, you get four kind of thing, yeah.
Excellent. Rob, thank you so much. It really has been inspirational to listen to your story, and some great advice there, so thank you.
Thank you very much.